Point, 8 to 10 p.m. Turning conventional wisdom on its head. Songezo Mabeqe on SAFM.
Good evening, Dr. Lamprecht. Welcome to SAFM.
Songezo, sir. It's nice to be speaking to you. Thanks for having me on.
You're the first person in a while who's called me. So I think the last time I was called, that was probably in high school. That's because I was in matric and there were Senate Sixes all over the place who were frightened.
And they had to.
Exactly. So yeah, you're the first person who doesn't have to who's called me, sir. So certainly that's a feather in my cap. I appreciate that. World Glaucoma Week, 10 to 15 March. Talk to us about the importance of the awareness of Glaucoma Week at a global level and what this year's theme is.
All right. So I think we should start with what is glaucoma. And
sure.
It's basically a progressive damage to the nerve between your eye and your brain. So it's the main path that the vision takes. Whatever you see with your eyes needs to get to your brain for processing, and that goes through the optic nerve. Glaucoma slowly but surely damages this nerve. And it's actually the leading cause of irreversible blindness. Obviously, you get different types of vision loss, and some of them can be fixed and cured and treated. But glaucoma, once you're blind, the vision is not recuperatable. So that is why there's such a drive towards awareness, because visual function plays such a big role in our independence, our daily function, our sense of being and awareness and self-esteem and worth and so forth. So that's why Glaucoma Week is such a big thing. And the other thing is that glaucoma, in the vast majority of patients with glaucoma, will be asymptomatic until it is very late. So you don't actually know that you have it for the majority of the time that you have the condition. And therefore, picking it up when it's symptomatic is often too little too late. You want to pick it up before you've had vision loss to functional aspects of your visual field, and hence the global awareness campaign.
Why the sense of lethargy? I note and know more the fact that it is benign, it is latent, it doesn't present as a symptom, and when it does, that's the point of no return. That aside, generally speaking, it's not just for healthcare, it's about a lot of things. Why do people not react when the first signal suggests something is not normal? Like, the body will find a way to fire warning shots, but for whatever reason, and I'm no exception here, I'll do it tomorrow, or I'm fine, or I will be fine, or I wonder what that is, I trust my body. Why do people respond like that more than not when it comes to critical aspects of healthcare, like eyesight, among others?
So, I mean, that's a very good question. It might not be an ophthalmologist question, because they're speaking more about, psychology and social psychology and why humans do the things they do in general. But, I mean, it is, one can definitely boil it down to the lack of the symptoms. The fact that, if you have an area of your body that is extremely itchy, and you've been to the doctor, you know what it is, it's some sort of eczema or whatever, and you know it's not going to harm you, you're going to be constantly aware of that area, even though you know that it's not bothering, that it's not going to damage you in the long term. And you're going to get treatment to stop the itching, and you're going to wear the clothes so it doesn't rub that area, etc. Just because you're aware of the symptom. And when something is asymptomatic, well, then it's not top of mind. It's like an alarm that's supposed to go off, and it just doesn't go off, And that's the problem with glaucoma. You said your body will fire the warning shots, but often in glaucoma, it does not. There's an exception where the pressure is extremely high, and you can get blurry vision, or if you're looking at a bright light source, like a car coming from the front, you might see a rainbow or a little halo around the light. And if it's extremely high, then you might even have eye pain, redness, nausea, vomiting, etc. But those are the exceptional cases. In most people, it's asymptomatic, and therefore, the lethargy. Once people become aware that something is wrong with their vision, then the anxiety levels shoot through the roof. I mean, we see that all the time, where we deal with not only the functional aspect of vision, but the tremendous impact it has psychologically. There's a large population study that was done where people were given the option to lose any of their five senses or a limb or memory, and vision outnumbered all the other metrics combined by 3-1. So people are terrified of losing their vision, but we're not always aware that we're losing vision in areas that we're not looking at all the time. And that's what glaucoma does. It starts usually in your mid-peripheral to peripheral vision. So not things that you're looking at directly, but things just sort of a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And our brains are amazing in the sense that they can fill in little bits of missing information. So we don't realize that it's actually missing. Each of us has a blind spot in each eye that we are blissfully unaware of. And there are things like, for instance, your nose. Almost all of us can see our nose all the time, but it doesn't bother us because our brain has gotten used to it. It's folding the information. And as we move and we have the detailed objects in our daily lives, we just don't miss these missing areas in our visual fields. And that definitely contributes to the lethargy. And again, the reason why we want to drive awareness for this kind of condition, because vision loss is to a large degree, or at least for a long time, preventable in this condition.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because, I mean, we're talking about some 6 million people on the continent being affected. Shockingly, only 1 in 20 are aware they have glaucoma, and some 50% will be blind in one eye by the time they seek an ophthalmologist for the first time. SSA, Sub-Saharan Africa, estimated that just under 5% of the population aged 40 years or older are in fact affected by glaucoma, and higher incident among the black population, 5-7%, compared to the white community, 3-5%. So there's a skew within the statistic. Forget that for a moment. You mentioned something which I think we probably just need to spend a little bit more time on.
Yes.
Our phones and our screens, and the fact that how digital the world has gone, so too has how we consume information. It's no longer watching television from 2-5 meters away, or reading a book physically, or picking up a physical document and reading. Everything is just about available on a laptop and a computer. And with data being accessible for those, so then increases your screen time. And made worse, when you wake up, the first thing most people do, I do it, is look at your phone. The last thing you look at before going to bed is your phone. The interface with screen time on glaucoma or the health of eyesight, what can you share?
All right. So, again, a lot that was said there, and I'm going to try and break it down. Firstly, I think those statistics were underestimates. If you look at a 5% in South Africa with a population of 60 million, what are we looking at there? It's about 3 million people already. So that's just South Africa.
Sure.
You know, if you're looking at Southern Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa, you're going to get way higher numbers of that. And most people who have glaucoma don't know that they have it. So, you know, these are estimates. And just based on the number of people that I see in a central Johannesburg practice, you know, people who are on medical aids with screening programs and annual health checks and these kinds of things. And I see patients arriving at my office for the first time in their 30s and 40s, blind in one eye and, you know, having lost 90%+ of the nerves in their other eye, you know. So I think those estimates are underestimates. And
I believe you, actually.
So one has to get to a point where you can start proper population-based screening. And this is where technology actually helps us. So getting to the question of screen time, I mean, I think the issue with screen time is more the content than the actual screen itself. We do know that, for instance, when you stare at a screen, you blink less. So your eyes will dry out and you'll start getting little spasms in the focus muscles in your eye, and that leads to eye strain. But very seldomly will you be in a context where that actually gives you permanent vision damage. You'll just experience strain. And then if on top of that you've got inflammatory dry eye and so forth, then those might cause longer-term problems. In the context of glaucoma, at night with screen time, those movements of the pupil in a subgroup of people, it can cause a sudden rise in the pressure. So that would be an exception in terms of screen time. We typically say that during the early evening, you know, the news hour, 8 o'clock, that's when some of these people will start having their pressure increases. And that would typically be the type that then gives you halos, headaches, etc. But screen time in and of itself is not as bad, I would say, as people say. There are other factors like blue light, and we think that blue light, especially before bedtime, is not ideal for your brain's regulation of your hormone cycles and your sleep cycles.
Blue light.
So the LED screens have typically high quantities.
That small
of
blue light on a television screen.
No. The light coming from your device.
Okay.
So LEDs actually have a high amount of blue overall in the white light, and that's why most of your devices now will have something called a night mode, which turns the color a little bit more like a yellowish brown color to try and filter out some of those that blue light. And that's also why some people wear the blue light blocking spectacles, but they typically don't block out enough blue light to really make a big difference. But we just, you know, not to hammer on the blue light, we just think that maybe at night, just before bed, high amounts of blue light is not the best for your sleep cycle and your hormone balance and so forth. But, you know, bringing it back to glaucoma, the screen time itself is not actually necessarily going to impact your glaucoma very negatively or cause long-term damage. And we should actually look at ways of making technology our friend. There are amazing screening platforms for visual field loss. There are AI-based screening solutions where you can submit photos taken through screening centers like optometrists and some ophthalmologists, which can actually then flag your risk for glaucoma at a relatively low cost. You know, so ultimately, I think technology is going to be our friend in this sphere. And we shouldn't shy away from that, but it needs to be managed appropriately. And I'm certainly not a fan of too much screen time, but the emphasis is often, I think, on the fear that the screen is the thing that's going to damage your eye, while there are other irreversible causes that are not being checked for. You know, a pair of blue light blocking glasses is not going to prevent your glaucoma and you know, lessen the damage that it causes.
Generally, what are then the risk factors?
All right, so by far the most important risk factor is age. But it's important to know that, you know, as I mention this to my patients, we often chuckle and they say, are you saying that I'm old? And that's not what I'm saying at all. As you get older, your risk for the problem increases. So, as I mentioned, I have quite a few patients in my own practice that are young, in their 30s and their 40s, and they have end-stage glaucoma. So, as you get older, the likelihood of this becomes more frequent. And then we know that certain population groups, like you've mentioned, genetically, there's a higher vulnerability to glaucoma, and specifically Africans. I mean, we have a fair amount of Asians in South Africa, the Asian population as well, and then also Hispanics, which is more, you know, in the southern parts of the United States. So there's definitely a genetic disparity, and Africans also tend to have earlier onset of the disease. They tend to have higher pressures in their eye. So the eyeball has its own pressure, which we can speak about in a little bit. But they have higher pressures, earlier onset, more aggressive progression. So in our context especially, it's absolutely critical to identify people with these risk factors, which is, you know, more than 90% of our population already. Then you look at things like family history. A lot of people know of a grandfather or an aunt that just went blind from old age. That's a telltale sign, because no one's supposed to go blind from old age. In the African population, your most likely causes are glaucoma and cataract. And cataract is treatable. Glaucoma is not curable once it's led to blindness. You know, so one has to consider the likelihood that someone has someone in their family that has gone blind from glaucoma. And then certain cardiovascular conditions, you know, that can affect the blood flow negatively to your end organ, similar to the way it can cause kidney or heart or, you know, strokes, etc. Glaucoma would also potentially fall in to the list of conditions that can be worsened by cardiovascular risk factors. We know that people with thin corneas And, you know, if you've got time, if we'll talk about depression and thin cornea, of course, it's one big factor that a lot of people aren't aware of. Thin corneas, people with high refractive errors, so people that are very nearsighted, short-sighted or myopic, or people that are farsighted or hyperopic, there are dynamics within the eye that give them a higher risk of developing glaucoma. So, you know, these are some of the main risk factors. Previous eye injuries, eye trauma is very common in South Africa, or previous eye surgery. A lot of people use cortisone or steroid-based nasal sprays and facial creams and so forth. And cortisone medication can raise the pressure in your eye and so forth. So lots of risk factors to consider. And if anyone heard, you know, the bell ring as I spoke through this list, you know, it's not about every person out there memorizing this list. It's about when you come across this information, ask yourself, am I on this list? Do I know someone on this list? And then get it checked out, you know, and see someone who is trained and specialized in this area.
Well, you seem to have hit a nerve somewhere, thankfully. He's right. My son has a pair of glasses with blue light blocking lens. Makes a difference. Learned a thing or two. Thank you. Well, we certainly do appreciate this feedback from our listeners at home. Final question to you, Dr. Johan Lamprecht, Executive Board Member at the Ophthalmological Society of South Africa. Goodness, that word. How I got it right, who knows?
Well,
key takeaways from this conversation. Key takeaways about the fact that we are raising awareness about glaucoma and what typically can somebody do to ensure their eye health is optimized for as long as possible.
So really, in terms of with a focus on glaucoma, the key takeaway is screening. And we do realize that access to screening and healthcare is a big hurdle for some people. And that's why I said we need to embrace technology, you know, kind of collaborations between private and public. We need to look at the NGOs who are they're running screening programs and so forth. But screening, you need to see a specialist in eye care at various points in your life. So before the age of 40, roughly every 4 years, between 40 and 60, roughly every 2 years, and after 60, roughly every year. So if you think about it, you know, we think young people don't have eye problems, but actually those every 4 years before the age of 40 includes young people as well. As a baby, someone needs to have a look at your eyes. As a preschooler, you need to check that your eyes are moving normally and you can see and so forth. In primary school, at least once. In high school, at least once. At varsity or college, at least once. At, you know, in your late 20s, once. In your early 30s, in your late 30s, and then you're 40. And from there, you go every 2 years. You need to see an ophthalmologist and or an optometrist every 2 years, and after the age of 60, every year. Unfortunately, there are some diseases that you will only pick up too late if you don't go for screening. And obviously, it is also in the hands of people who make up policies and regulation and develop large-scale projects to look at ways to ensure that people can have access to health screening. You know, and often people see the eye as this small organ, and you know, where, how do you put it on the map in the context of bigger problems like trauma and diabetes and poverty and all of that? But as I mentioned, visual disability has a massive impact on independence and economic viability and self-esteem and psychological well-being and so forth. So the takeaway is screening. See
screening.
An eye.
Screening.
Screening, screening, screening. If you've never had an eye check, get one. And based on your age and your risk factors, family history, other diseases, medicine use, etc., you need to then decide, well, after this episode, when is my next episode? And stick to that program so that you can pick these things up early.
Very well. Let's leave it there. Dr. Johan Lamprecht, thanks very much for your time. That was a thoroughly enjoyable conversation, very educational as well.